This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Hey, sports fans, it's Mason Crosby.
And Reese Crosby. If you enjoy football, and brotherly banter, be sure to check out Kicking It with the Crosbys.
Here's some stories from my NFL playing days, goofy conversations about everyday life, giving you entertaining lessons on the pitches across the pond, fun, relatable guests, and what it means to live life on purpose.
New episodes drop every Tuesday and Thursday. Be sure to subscribe to Kicking It with the Crosbys on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Mike Shope.
You might be mocking me or you might be staunchly agreeing with me. I can't tell.
I'm mocking you.
And the Bulldog.
What is Fozzie Bear's role in this production?
On WGR Sports Radio 550.
Off to Indianapolis. One of our regular weekly conversations here now with Chris Trapasso, CBS Sports, as we look ahead to the NFL draft, which is just about 2 months away. Chris joins us from Indy, site of the ongoing NFL Combine. What kind of week has it been so far, Chris?
A lot of rumors, a lot of conversations about Matthew Stafford and the domino effect that could create. Is it the Giants? Is it the Raiders? Is it a surprise team, maybe the Pittsburgh Steelers? And then how does Sam Darnold play into that, too? I think it's especially interesting this year. And there's always those rumors early in the week before the workouts begin. But because at picks 1, 2, and 3, you have teams that are desperate, need quarterbacks, and it's not presumed and widely believed to be that good of a quarterback class at the top. A lot of the times the teams just say, hey, look, we're not going to trade for Matthew Stafford, give you early picks, and give him $50 million. We'll just draft Jaden Daniels or whoever. I don't know if that's such a slam dunk this year, or I guess it really feels like that's not a slam dunk whatsoever in this draft class.
Did you see, Bulldog, Ian Rappaport? I mean, his tweets... There's always, like, one more sentence that's just completely unnecessary. He has that Brady and Matthew Stafford, unplanned, met at a ski resort in Montana. Like, I know when I'm in Montana, I usually run into friends. Like, that's usually what happens to me. But he made sure to just hit you over the head with, this was not a, because, you know, that would be wrong. This was not planned. He's not allowed to do that.
Right.
So they have Stafford meeting with Brady, and Chris, he's moving. I mean, Stafford is moving somewhere, I think.
Yeah, I think that seems coming out of Combine Week, where a lot of the media will leave tonight or tomorrow. I'm headed back to Buffalo tomorrow morning. That is the presumed exit for him, that he's going to be traded. That even after all the success with the LA Rams, obviously winning the Super Bowl, coming close to beating the Eagles in the playoffs in the divisional round, I haven't heard anything that indicates, oh, actually the Rams might just decide to kind of heel turn and ultimately sign him to a long-term deal that he wants. He's going to be on a new team in 2025.
I wonder what the Rams are then going to do. You know, like that's a question. Like they still are in like a contention window, aren't they? Roster wise, had a great draft last year. Mm-hmm. So I don't.
Darnold is the rumor.
It's an interesting time for that. Yeah. Okay. Wow.
Yeah, I was going to say Sam Darnold with the connection between the Vikings head coach Kevin O'Connell and Sean McVay. They're like close friends. They text each other all the time. They obviously work together with Kyle Shanahan. That Kevin O'Connell could give Sean McVay that vote of confidence and say, look, like we know what Sam Darnold was, but he had a great season for us. He's good on this play, on this staple of our offense. It's, you know, similar terminology. And like you're mentioning, still a team that has quality players. It's not like sending Sam Darnold back to the Jets and saying, oh, hey, you know, try this again. So that's what has been linked, that the Stafford trade, wherever he ultimately goes, will then kind of be the first domino that would then lead to the Vikings and the Rams ultimately deciding to trade. And the other part of that is, too, the Vikings are going into this draft right now with only 4 draft picks. So they want picks. they want to start J.J. McCarthy, who they picked in the first round last year, picked number 10, who's coming off the ACL injury that he suffered in the preseason. So they don't want to necessarily, you know, sign Sam Darnold to a 2 or 3 year deal and then suddenly J.J. McCarthy never plays. So it's really all aligning for that to be the second domino that would fall after Stafford moves.
Seeing as how we're here, we'll get to the Bills' interests here and what you're hearing from players who are talking already in advance of the workouts beginning. But the quarterback class, is Cam Ward certain to be the first guy? How good do you think he is? And what do you think of Shedeur Sanders? And then, I don't know, a couple of guys that fall in behind there. Feels like Tyler Shough's having a bit of a week before the combine even gets going. His name is sort of popping up, and there's Jackson Dart and Jalen Milroe. How about a pecking order, and how many first rounders do you think there will be?
All right, so I think in terms of is it a certainty that Cam Ward is the first quarterback off the board, I would say it's not a certainty, but it will if he's not, a lot of people like myself and the media that is scouting, evaluating these players will be like, wait, Cam Ward is a better quarterback and has more upside than Shedeur Sanders. But I think with Sanders, he can bill himself as more week one ready to start. And there's, you know, for as many teams that might shy away from this media circus and having Deion Sanders connected to your organization, I think some teams might like it. I think the Las Vegas Raiders might lean into that and say, we have Chip Kelly, we have Tom Brady, we want to make a big splash. We've been really irrelevant at the quarterback position for a long time. It wouldn't be shocking if Sanders, who I think is widely considered not as good as Cam Ward, is ultimately the first one off the board. We'll see how their careers ultimately play out after that. And then in terms of other quarterbacks, yeah, Tyler Shough is one that he's an older prospect. He's 25, but the big arm is absolutely there. A few analysts that I've talked to, fellow analysts like Dylan Gabriel from Oregon, is kind of this point guard distributor. I don't really view him as someone that's going to be an NFL caliber starter, but I think he can be a quality backup or a bridge guy. Mm-hmm. And I think Kyle McCord from Syracuse, I went into the week liking him a relative amount. Like, I think late second, third round wouldn't be crazy. And in asking around and talking to some people actually within the league last night at the JW Marriott, they're like, yeah, I think the league likes Kyle McCord. They know he's not a mobile quarterback, but a lot of big-time throws last season at Syracuse, and was a high-level recruit who, 2 years ago was playing in the big game against Michigan. So he's someone that is maybe flying a little bit under the radar because he doesn't meet those normal or what have become the normal athleticism standards at the quarterback spot.
With Chris Trapasso here on the Western Hotline, Mike Schoep and the Bulldogs. So back to the top of the draft, where we really didn't leave that so much, talking about the quarterbacks, starting with Cam Ward. Travis Hunter, Chris, so we had the Titans yesterday say, like, all the GMs are talking, and how they see Hunter as a corner from Colorado, and the Browns, who have the second pick, say they see him as a receiver. What has it sounded like to you? What's the consensus on him, and what does it all mean, in your opinion, to his likely draft outcome?
The consensus is what the Titans GM Mike Borgonzi said, that he's going to be a corner and he'll get wide receiver packages early in his career. The joke that I was making when I was talking to a scout last night was, well, what happens if when he gets those touches on offense, he's creating splash plays over and over again? Eventually, you got to just roll him out there more full time. But a lot of people last night were talking about Andrew Berry, the GM of the Browns, comments in that they have the second overall pick. We don't know if they're going to pick a quarterback. We might get some more clarity with all the Stafford and veteran quarterback stuff over the next couple months. But with the team with the number 2 overall pick is saying, we actually view him as a receiver in a receiver-driven league. And his rationale made sense, too, that he said, we know he's a tremendous athlete, but his ball skills are actually his best trait, and you're going to obviously use those more at receiver than at corner. I think it kind of perked the ears up of a lot of us that have certainly loved him on film, and I think he would be wide receiver 1 in this class if that's all that he was. But I went in, and a lot of people that I've talked to went into the combine thinking, the NFL is just going to place him at corner. Now we at least have, a universe in which maybe we're talking about Travis Hunter as like a Garrett Wilson-type wide receiver in the NFL.
Is there a well-known preference on the player's part? Like, has he declared what he would prefer to do?
I don't think he has said that. It wouldn't shock me, though, if it comes out sometime during draft season what he prefers to do. What I find interesting, and I'll say it quick, is that this was the same question going into his final season at Colorado, and all he did was just play full-time corner and full-time wide receiver and won the Heisman Trophy. So that it was kind of interesting that, that's you know something that we've already gone over with Hunter, and he has passed all of those tests and all the and answered all those questions throughout his college career.
So we talked about quarterbacks here a little bit already. There are other names. Jackson Dart is one that some might predict goes in the first round. What would your over-under be on this? Three? You feel like it's three first-round QBs?
Yeah, it's probably three, maybe two and a half. It depends. I mean, we'll have a little, obviously, like I just said, we'll have a little more clarity after free agency and when Stafford moves and if Darnold moves, and we can kind of, we'll be able to talk on this show and say, all right, there's like only like one team that, really needs a quarterback and there's always a surprise one, or are there three or four teams that still have a clear need at the quarterback spot? Dart could move up. He's really the only other one. I, myself, like Jalen Milroe from Alabama, I have found out this week that I am definitely in the minority in that opinion.
You and I are together here, buddy. That's not, my guy.
Not in this group, you're not.
Okay, well, that's good to know. That like boosts my spirits a little bit because it was like, oh, third or fourth round, he's got to change a wide receiver. I certainly understand that he's raw, but I think he is going to test through the roof. He is like Lamar Jackson, Jalen Hurts type running threat. He's bigger than he's – bigger, thicker than Lamar Jackson, and I think he's grown as a passer in his seasons at Alabama. Certainly some wayward misses and some times where he seems confused by coverage, but like we saw with Josh Allen, we saw with Deshaun Watson, Russell Wilson, a lot of these quarterbacks, if you're a supreme athlete, you can lean on your legs early in your career while the game is slowing down for you as a passer. So Jalen Milroe is not generating a lot of buzz, a guy from Alabama, but I like him quite a bit.
I wonder if a player like him, how much, because I think of Allen, of course, as an example, and that teams would be seduced by that. But in between Allen and Milroe, you've got Anthony Richardson.
Yeah.
And like that, it's not a direct comp because Richardson didn't play a lot of football, and this guy, Milroe, has played more than that. Anyway, but I wonder if like that's a buyer beware now because Richardson has gotten off to such a rocky start in Indianapolis.
Yeah, I was just on a podcast I think yesterday, and I made a similar point that Richardson was like the fifth or sixth overall pick in 23, largely because of every team looking for the next Josh Allen or Patrick Mahomes or Lamar Jackson. The athleticism, the ad-libbing ability, designed run game ability was all there with him. I think Milroe's buzz has been kind of pushed down because of the season that Anthony Richardson had in 2024. If this was last year and Jalen Milroe was just pushed into that class, there would be a lot more buzz because teams would still be, you know, kind of viewing that as the type of quarterback that the league is looking for. So I think there is a little buyer beware because of Richardson, and I don't really think that's fair to Jalen Milroe. He's a different quarterback with actually more collegiate experience than Anthony Richardson when he was coming into the NFL.
Like, I would trust that Milroe would know not to tap out in the middle of a drive during an NFL game because I'm tired.
Maybe he just wanted to give his team a better chance of winning.
That wasn't a good look for Richardson.
Not a good look. With Chris Trapasso. So defensive line has been a big focus with Bills fans, and sort of much of the speculation about them is that. You know, and also it seems like the right year for it, picking late in the first round. One player we talked about yesterday is Kenneth Grant out of Michigan, and I saw that he did some media today, mentioned that he had already had a meeting with the Bills. So if you have a thought on him, great. But just the depth at D-line and just how it lines up for the Bills, it seems like it might really line up really well.
It does line up very well. That is probably the strongest class in terms of top-end talent and depth. And ironically, edge rusher is probably the second best at that, like in terms of top-end talent and depth in this class, maybe running back as well. But two of the Bills' top needs, I think they'll be able to have a lot of players that they like on the board when they're picking at 30. As for Kenneth Grant, I'm grading these players for the entire NFL. So I have Kenneth Grant graded a little bit lower. He's big. He's a nose tackle. He's not going to be a 70 pressure, 12 sack guy in the NFL. But I could see the Bills, especially picking at 30, just wanting a bigger body next to Ed Oliver. And then if that's the case, I wouldn't necessarily trash the grade and say, oh, my God, it's a D plus. I have him graded in the 50s and they picked him at 30. So teams obviously have their own boards that do factor in needs and just specific body types that I think they want. Kenneth Grant next to Ed Oliver would make a lot of sense. Grant 6'3", 330. I think he's going to test pretty well. Flashes of pass rusher ability, but he's really just a great run stuffer at Michigan that never takes a playoff. So it for me, in a vacuum, I don't think he's the 30th best player in the class, but it would make sense for the Bills if they ultimately pick him there, because it feels like that's where his buzz is going to kind of land him range-wise in April.
Who are some other players at let's stay on defensive tackle for now, or defensive line, because edge is kind of its own separate category. Like, sure. Shamar Stewart is a guy that I feel like has a tremendous athletic profile, but is he the guy? I might be commingling players here, but is he a guy who just hasn't had a lot of production, even though he looks like he should be just murdering people?
Yes, he looks like a chiseled tight end on the field, and he is going to, when it comes to the workout, the when the official measurables are out, he's going to look like a number one overall pick. Like, I think he's that big of an athlete. He was a huge recruit. He played at Texas A&M, and you watch him on film, and you see, oh, my God, the first step at on the edge or when he's reduced inside is, like, unbelievable. You're thinking this guy's going to be a top 10 pick. When it comes to the pass rush moves to beat blockers with his hands, not really there. He rushes kind of high because he's tall. He's like 6'6", 280, 290. Doesn't have a ton of power yet. But we know that Greg Rousseau was not a finished product and was very young and had 1 year of experience at Miami. So, yes, he is the guy that will probably be the most polarizing among defensive tackles and edge rushers, because he looks like a bigger version of Jadeveon Clowney, who obviously was the first pick in 14, but just didn't have the production that you normally like to see of a first rounder. Now, if we're talking pick 30, maybe that's where the Bills are saying, like, well, this is what we do. We like to draft physical freaks, and we'll roll the dice with someone that has Stewart's just natural ability, because he certainly has a lot of them in spades.
So Bulldog latched on to your Elijah Badger tweet. Chris,
did you watch them?
I did. Not much more than what you tweeted, the couple of clips there, but your Diggs comparison, I totally got it. Because the way he moved, the way he created space for himself, I thought there, and footwork wise, I could see Diggs in there.
Yeah, so there's, I mean, fortunately, and I'm very grateful for this, I have access to all 22 college film, but there is like a 6-minute, now it's just highlights, so don't go crazy, any of the listeners, there's a 6-minute YouTube like highlight reel of all, like almost all of his catches. He only had 39 of them last season, but they went for like 800 yards. He averaged like 20 yards a catch. When you watch it, tell me you don't see Stephon Diggs in terms of his movement skills, the way he beats press at the line after the catch. He has really strong hands, very natural hands catcher, and he's someone that is not generating a lot of buzz, but was a huge transfer portal guy. He was awesome at Arizona State in 22 and 23, was a big get for Florida, and didn't have crazy volume. But when you only have 39 catches and you're still invited to the combine, it shows that teams have seen your film and know that you know, he can get open and really is a complete wide receiver. So if the Bills go D-tackle and edge and all, you know, address those positions earlier in the draft, if Elijah Badger, third, fourth round, I think he would be a great addition because he has speed and can play on the outside.
How many receivers go by the end of round two? We've got a small handful in the first round like ever, although nobody's talking about the class like it's as good as recent years. But McMillan is what, top 10, and then two or three more? Is there a flood of receivers going on day two?
I wouldn't say like a flood of them. But first off, I will say, Shope, that we might see like we had in 2019 when Marquise Brown was the only wide receiver picked in the first round. Like, we could see Tet McMillan from Arizona. I mean, if we're going to just for the time being count Travis Hunter as a corner, Luther Burden, I don't think he's going to test well enough to go in round one. Emeka Egbuka, I think he's a quality player. He's like a bigger version of Robert Woods. He's not like, oh my God, this guy's Terry McLaurin 2.0 or Garrett Wilson 2.0, the other Ohio State wide receivers who have really boomed in the NFL. Matthew Golden could ultimately go there too. After that, There's Tez Johnson from Oregon, who's a slot receiver, super twitchy, kind of like a Tank Dell, Tutu Atwell type. I don't know if we're going to see a glut of them like in the first 40 or 50 picks, but scattered throughout day two and early into round three, Alec Aomanor from Stanford, Savion Williams from TCU is a big, fast, like linear athlete, good after the catch. It's not great in terms of the depth in this wide receiver class. That doesn't mean that none of them are going to ultimately be good players, but we've been spoiled over the last 3 or 4 years with just awesome talent at the top and then tons of, you know, the DK Metcalfs and the A.J. Browns and the Deebo Samuels, the George Pickens. Later in day two, I think it'll be more spread out at wide receiver in this class.
I apologize if you said this specifically. Who would be your wide receiver two?
Right now, it's Luther Burden, but a lot of what happens here in Indy at the Combine will tweak my grade a little. And that's obviously, again, saying Travis Hunter is a corner. Right. Jack Besh, my wide receiver three from TCU, is probably my favorite receiver in the class. I don't know if I said this when I was on with you guys 2 weeks ago. My comp for him is Puka Nacua. Like, he gives me those same vibes of just he will catch any pass, whether it's in traffic, whether he's getting hit. He's great after the catch. He played on the perimeter. He produced at a high level, like as a freshman at LSU. Then he transfers to TCU, goes over 1,000 yards with bad quarterback play last year. Jack Besh is one that's a really fun watch, along with the guy that Bulldog and I seem to like, Elijah Badger at Florida.
A TCU receiver, what could go wrong?
Jalen Reagor, Quentin Johnson. I get it.
Yeah, but heard a lot about him, for sure. Very good. Chris, enjoy the rest of your time there. Thanks for today.
All right, guys. All right. Appreciate it, guys.
Chris Trapasso, CBS Sports. Sal Capaccio will join us also from Indianapolis later today, just after 5. All right. Elijah Badger, you have a guy.
I'm glad you remembered my guy.
Yeah, you didn't.
I might have slipped my mind. I'm glad you got there for me.
Well, it's Chris's guy, and now it's your guy.
Right,
you're with him.
Right. Chris turned me on to the guy.
Yeah.
I'm also Milroe. Right. I'm thrilled about that. Thrilled to have that.
I'm not thrilled about Beto missing 2 breakaways in this Everton game. How many breakaways do you ever see in Premier League?
Should try a little harder. It's Beto.
How do you reconcile how demonstrably upset teammates are on like every scoring chance in soccer that the ball didn't come to them? Do they just sort of like when the game is over, everybody's cool?
I think so. Yeah, it's a thing that is not acceptable in North American team sports at all. Like showing up teammates like that, but it happens all the time in soccer.
This Alcaraz on Everton, he doesn't get the pass there. Beto's 1-on-1 with the keeper, save, and Alcaraz and then he
kicked the ball into the crowd.
He kicked the ball sitting at the goal line for like a future goal kick. He just crushes it. He can't control himself, just so upset. He got to make sure everybody knows.
Yep.
Oh my God! If your kids did that, you just never let them play sports again.
It's the worst.
It is the worst. Matthew Stafford to Vegas. Could be Rodgers is out working again though with the Rams maybe opening up. He's working that. I mentioned Sal coming on later. We invite your calls on the Sabres too. Another fun win. I say another. Do you have hope? You could admit it. 803-05. I said the same thing an hour ago, and no one admitted it. No. Zero people admitted it. Sal at 5. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog, WGR.
So Deion Walker from Kentucky is one of the more interesting guys where I think he has some plays. He's 360 pounds. We'll see what he weighs in and the length and everything this week, but he's a monster. And you'd see him at the Senior Bowl. He's inconsistent on film. He was inconsistent at the Senior Bowl. The potential's there, though. Somebody's going to look at him and say, if he's in the second, you don't have too many guys that size who move that well. So if Kenneth Grant goes really early at his size, Deion Walker being like that second wave of monstrous nose tackle who's got some pad level issues. He has some inconsistencies on film, but if you can work with that, like you can see when he does it right, it is great.
Steve Palazzolo, formerly of PFF with Sam Monson now on their excellent podcast, Check the Mic. Sal ran into Steve, I guess, recently, and they had that conversation. Deion Walker.
Like a picture of those two standing next to one another. Isn't Steve like 6'10"?
6'9", 6'10".
He's a big dude.
Deion Walker, D-E-O-N-E, Deion. Elijah Badger, E-L-I-J-H-A-H. Elijah. Not that you need to know. You know, do you think when the teams send up the cards, how often is there going to be a spelling error?
I would say I would expect it to be very rare.
Okay. And it's not like a deal breaker. Like if you spell it wrong, you don't get them. Might think I have that in my fantasy leagues. I do not.
I would hope not.
You don't have to spell anything in our fantasy leagues. You just have to be able to say it. That's it.
Are the cards, do the teams have, see, this is a thing I don't know about the draft. I should pay more attention. Do they have to write the name of the player on and then hand the card in, or do they have cards pre-printed with all, like the player and his college and his position that they just, who are we taking? We're taking that guy. Okay, grab his card.
I think they write it, but maybe that's a long time ago now. I don't know. In my mind, they write it, but there's also a helmet phone sitting there.
Right, so it's a while ago now.
I don't know if they still even have that.
Yeah.
I love the helmet phone. I always wanted one. Never had a helmet phone. You?
No, I always wanted a helmet phone. The helmet phone.
I have helmets.
I had SI for a long time. I had a subscription that came to, like, predating me working in media, even. Like, I loved the magazine, so when I, moved out on my own, like, I'm buying it, not right away, but eventually. But, I had the subscription. And, year over year, like, for probably 10 years running, I had the subscription to the magazine. And I look forward to it every, Rick Riley, Steve Ruchin, like, all these guys, like, these great writers. Excellent, right? And then you see the TV commercials back when there were commercials for magazines during sporting events and all these incentives to sign up. I'm like, I never got anything. I didn't get a football phone. I didn't get a
football
helmet. But I've been paying for 8 years here. Where's my phone? You should just send me a phone out of loyalty. I've been giving you for all these years annual subscription, and I got nothing to show for it over here.
I don't know.
Just didn't sign up when the getting was good, I guess. I was ahead of it.
You got to cancel and then sign up again.
Right.
And then you get your football phone.
Yeah.
I can picture that phone. I can picture that ad. It's just a guy, I don't know, just something about it's familiar to me. I started to try to describe it, and then I realized I couldn't.
The phone itself or
the ad? No, the ad. Okay, yeah, but yeah. I can remember those ads. And the swimsuit issue. Don't forget about the swimsuit issue.
Sure.
That was very prominent in those days, if it's not anymore. Sal coming up at 5. We started on the Sabres today, and I don't know, 1% is not 0%, but there's quite a bit to like. And look, I mean, I'm sort of baiting you with, you want to admit buying in all this? One reason why, it's not whether you buy in, but just maybe you'd be annoyed if they got close.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of people would be annoyed if they got close because they lost 13 games in a row and sat still.
And it's easy to play, better now without as much pressure because, they're really not supposed to make it. So if they get hot and, it's you're defying expectations, there's not an expectation that you're going to get anything. Whereas, earlier in the year when they're losing 13 games, it's like, stop it so you can see. You're in a playoff spot when this started, right? That was Thanksgiving. They came home, swept California. I think they were third in the division when we talked to Kevin Adams on Thanksgiving Eve. And then they lost the next 13 times they played, including some incredible, 4-0 with Colorado in the first period. And they lost that game.
Right.
2-goal lead in the third period against Detroit was mixed in there. They lost that game in a shootout, but still, they lost it. Or overtime. I don't remember. We were there. I can't remember what happened in that Detroit game. I just know they lost. I think it was in a shootout. Anyways, I could look
you
at
and
the
I
schedule.
Went to that game.
Yeah, we were at that game together. Yeah.
Yeah, that was a shootout.
Yeah, okay.
More of what comes out of the combine, and we might get into some of this with Sal, but I have from Underdog, NFL plans to recommend use of virtual measurements for first downs in 2025. Chain crew would remain on sideline as backup. They already did that. There's always these where they're going to basically declare something. They were already doing it. What about the line judge pointing across his belly you know, in the direction of a first down to signal first down to the referee is not virtual measurements. Someone's watching the game, the guy gets tackled, and the line judge, you know, comes in, turns on his earpiece, we're going, first down. That's not the chain gang. That's the opposite of the chain. That's somebody, you know, making that call from far away. So now maybe next year that's sort of like official.
But sure.
What's the difference? Also, Jonathan Jones tweets, the league's internal data on the tush push revealed there was a 0% injury rate.
There's
concern over the potential for injury, but to date, there have been no reported injuries from that play. So this was Sean McDermott on Monday talking about the tush push after coming out of the competition committee meeting. You know, he referred to injuries.
Player safety should be at a premium, yada, yada.
And I said in our conversation with Sal about that, you know, he didn't have data. Maybe you'd want to have data before you go to the meeting, not after. You know, he comes out of the meeting, he can't get away with, like, after a Bills game saying, well, I haven't talked to the trainers yet, which may or may not be true. He doesn't have to tell you, you know, just like, I actually don't know what the injury status is because I haven't talked to anybody yet. But he just had the competition committee meeting, and he came out of it and was like, well, you know, injuries. But I don't know the numbers. That's something I'd want to know before the meeting.
Well, the numbers are do not support the claim at all.
The numbers are zero.
Right.
And he did say in his comments on Monday, he made the point about the aesthetic of the play. The Bills are second to the Eagles in the use of this play. And together, the Bills and the Eagles have run it more than the rest of the NFL combined. So I don't know. McDermott might be conflicted here, where maybe deep down he doesn't like it. I mean, there's a lot about Allen running over the years that I don't think he was sort of simpatico with, but it worked, and you know, all right, but we know that. And he maybe didn't have it when he talked about injuries on Monday, and then also made the point about like what the play looks like. It, you know, I said, just sort of thinking it through out loud on Monday, like, is it a football play? Ross Tucker on Twitter yesterday called it the football play. Like, the quintessential football play. Men are men, you know, and who's stronger in this play? You know, he's also an Eagles guy, but I don't doubt that he was sincere in saying that. And Bills, by the way, his two favorite teams, as he would tell you.
Yeah. Well, I did not catch this on Monday, and I it's one of these things I hope I can find if I'm going to reference it or even say it. I think McDermott tried to differentiate the way they do it versus the way Philadelphia does it. As he was talking and talking, he I think tried to create, at least give everyone listening the impression that they're not running the exact same play. To my eyes, it's similar enough what they're doing, and they've got guys behind Allen that help push him through the line. And that's the thing about, like, I don't disagree that lining up and just trying to smash the guy in front of you, like, I have no problem accepting that that is football. What the struggle has been all along is one or two or sometimes three dudes from behind the quarterback arriving after the snap and finishing the play by pushing the pile forward. That's a new thing in football that came in when the Eagles started doing it. Now the Bills, again, have followed suit. It's not as many people behind Allen, but there's usually at least one pushing him.
Right.
And that is, I think, when people say it's not football, that, I think, is what they're referring to. Not so much that you shouldn't be able to line up like the Eagles or the Bills or any team. You line up and I'm gonna try to push you off the line of scrimmage so my quarterback can get a yard. Okay, yeah, duh, that's football. But the idea of using the weight behind the quarterback to push, like we said even when we were talking about this already earlier in the week, all over the field, that's being allowed now in a way that, to my eyes and my recollection, it was not something that was either allowed or encouraged. I mean, you just never saw it. You saw the whistle blow, forward progress. But now the cavalry comes in, and we got guys being pushed 7, 8, 10 yards down the field in the pile. And that never used to happen. And that, I think, is being generated out of the tush-push phenomenon itself and it being allowed at the line of scrimmage. So they're allowing it other places on the field. And that's gotten kind of, that's gotten pretty muddy in my view. Like, I'm not sure what to really make of all that, but the idea of it, in theory, not being a football play, I disagree with it. Like, so I would line up with Ross on that to an extent, but the guys piling in late, that doesn't look like a football play to me. That looks like rugby.
Yeah, that's how I see it too. That's the distinction. Nobody's trying to ban the quarterback sneak.
Right.
Warren Sharp had how Washington was amazing on fourth down this year without running the sneak once. They had 87% or something conversion on fourth down without ever sneaking Daniels. I tweeted about that just to say it still sort of seems amazing to people on some level, fourth and short, fourth and one. You want to, we're going to, and we slowly are getting to a point where the down is not the point. It's that it's 1 yard or 2 yards. And if you have Allen or Hurts or Jackson or even Daniels or any number of guys, Justin Fields, you should almost never miss, right? Like, you should almost never miss. What one thing that's upsetting about Allen getting stopped in Kansas City, the Bills had the lead in the fourth quarter. And that play happened where he got stopped, you know, quote, stopped on fourth and short, is there's so many other things you can do with him. You know, I mean, including throwing the ball, but just rolling out and different things. I'm not trying to make it, like, well, that failed, so you should have. It's not hindsight. Mm-hmm. It's just you don't necessarily want to settle for 1 yard on that play. And if they're all up in the box expecting the tush push or a sneak, that's when you can get them. Third and three should, like, never be behind the line of scrimmage for the Bills, you know, running plays and such. Go get it. And then you have fourth and three, which is, you know, still odds on you should make it on those plays. So, I mean, of course, fourth down means you have to lose possession if you don't get the first down, I know. But that's the thing, I think, the overall sensibilities about those kinds of plays are just gradually shifting over to, like, well, it's still just 1 yard, you know, if that makes sense. Sal coming up at 5, Mike Schoep and the Bulldog here, WGR. Getting connected with the fans brought to you by Northtown Kia, Western New York's number one Kia dealer. Shop online at northtownkia.com. Here is Miranda. Go ahead, Miranda. Okay.
Tough one there.
Maybe next time.
Yep.
Maybe next time. And I cut the song short.
And it was just getting to the good part.
It was.
I don't know. What's this baseball prospectus on display over there?
It just
catches my okay, yeah. I've got Gene Steratore, who I for 10 years thought was Steve Carell dressed up like an NFL ref, but it is actually former NFL ref Gene Steratore. Makes way more sense. I just thought maybe Steve Carell had been in some Adam Sandler movie that I'd never seen, and he just a little like Steve Carell to me. Anyway, I didn't notice that's on the camera. It's a sharp looking. I mean Paul Skeens. It's pretty good.
It's one of my favorite things about this time of year is when this book comes out. My late friend Dean, known as Dean Dean through the years on this show, it's one of many, many things that leads me to thinking of him, is that we would text each other every year, like, when is baseball prospectus coming out? Who has it? What one of us would find it and then text the other. Mm-hmm. It's in this store, Amazon, whatever. And he died a couple of weeks ago. And I thought it's when I get into baseball
right.
for a few weeks, I cram. I don't know who anybody is. Every year at this time, I don't know who anybody is. What team? Nothing. I feel like I'm starting from scratch every year because I paid almost no attention during the season. And so it was the race for this book that he and I always used to have. And I miss him for many reasons, and that's one. But, yeah, fantasy drafts next weekend in Philadelphia. annual trip.
All right.
Then one more locally in a few weeks. And I'm excited for it. And this, when we get to this time of year, I carry this book everywhere. When I went to Canada on Friday to watch curling in a bar, I just found a place that would have it on.
Right.
Went to the door. Can you put it on? They do. I take the book in thinking, I'm that guy. I was that guy last Friday with a book
in a bar.
A book in a bar.
I mean, it's not Hemingway, but still, sure.
No. No. I don't know when I expected to read it. You know, sitting there with the curling on, who could possibly look away?
Oh, it's gripping.
But, you know, I carry it everywhere. Tonight you'll see me at Canisius for Canisius Timon, and I'll have this book, probably. That's a situation where I might end up reading some of the book. Halftime.
Yeah.
Pre-game.
Is this boys' varsity basketball?
It is.
Yeah, all right.
It is a doubleheader tonight at Canisius University is where they play.
Oh, Kessler, you'll be right around the corner from me.
That's right. But I love this book. It's brilliant. It's tons of information and analysis, of course, but the writing is hilarious. When I ever read prospectus, I think whether the players read their own blurbs, because sometimes it's like so harsh
really?
That
okay.
You wouldn't want to read it if it was about you in prospectus. Right. Sal Capaccio next. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog, WGR.